Okay.
So let's get into the purposes and goals, otherwise it's going to lose time.
The purpose in life, okay, is basically that inner spiritual quest, okay? It may be represented by you becoming incredibly rich and saving 1 million people or whatever. But purpose is basically, hey, what am I doing here? And there's not a person in this room that does not intuitively know what they're doing here. You might have clouded it with 1,000 obligations or 1,000 perceived whatevers, but you sort of know. And if you don't, I'm going to ask you to get in touch with it today. Your goals are like signposts on the way to the purpose. My purpose is to become a great teacher. My goal is to qualify as a yoga practitioner by August. Goal one. My purpose is to learn about interpersonal relationships. Goal two is to find a husband so I can practice on somebody. You know? My purpose in life is to understand balance and imbalance. Goal three, I think I'm going to work on the fact that my body's falling apart. And so we work, we look at the overall purpose, and between us and the purpose, there's a certain amount of goals. And we look at what are your goals. So now I'm going to have you look in the next step at what is your purpose in life, and I would like you also to explain what your goals are, okay? We're going to divide up into groups of five, and in the five groups, each person is going to talk for 2 minutes to the other members of the group, okay, about what their purpose is and what their goals is. Now, take a look and see whether or not that causes within you a reaction. Take a look and see whether or not it causes within you confusion that you don't know what the bloody hell your purpose is. Let us look at what you do. You'll sit there with the other people. They will not get overly involved of going, oh, I know. They're not going to do that. They are basically going to do God force, and they're going to say, thank you for that. We appreciate you telling us, you know? They're not going to offer advice or say, yes, I know, but I know a computer shop you can get that from. We're going to do that, and we're going to have you verbalize exactly what you want out of life and what is your purpose. You will talk for 2 minutes. The person next to you will talk for 2 minutes. And I would like you, as the person is talking and you're doing the listening, I would like you to practice centering your consciousness by not letting yourself become distracted. And when you do become distracted, I want you to watch your mind distracting it. Now, you've all come back from lunch and you've taken in some protein and some alcohol, perhaps here and there, and you're looking at that. Try to see if you can center upon something long enough to concentrate on it. Because what we're going to ask you to do tomorrow is, I'm going to ask you to center upon your life so that you do not become distracted in consciousness at all. Most people fail because they have an idea, and then 2 minutes later you say, what's the idea? And they go, no, wait, well, you know, they head off, they want to be the greatest jockey in the world, and on the way to the saddle shop, they get talking to the taxi driver, and they wind up at the station selling insurance. And you've done it. There's people doing it here, right in this room, who wanted to do something, and on the way to going and doing it, they got totally sidetracked, and they're somewhere totally different. So I'm not saying that when you decide on something, it absolutely has to become like an obsession, because you can move towards something and you can find a different opportunity that serves the same purpose, i.e., let us say you want to learn about people, so you decide to become a school teacher, and on the way to studying the exams and blah, 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 suddenly you get an opportunity to work in a holistic health center, you know? So, okay, you didn't wind up being a teacher, but you're working as a health practitioner and you're learning about people that way. So the goal is the same, you just manifested it in various different ways. We want to look at honing your consciousness. Okay, we will talk about high intention, high clarity, high resonance. We talked about that a bit the other night, but we didn't really get into really what it means, just as a quick flip, and we're going to look at it this afternoon more deeply. I'm going to ask you, as that person is talking, to concentrate on them. And when you drop your no matter how boring they are, concentrate on them, okay? And I'm sure they're not boring, because it looks like a pretty interesting crowd here. But even if you're falling asleep, watch yourself doing it. And then when you talk about your life, let us look at those purposes and let us see what it is, whether you're describing fantasies, you know, whether you're saying, I want $10 million, understanding universal law doesn't understand $10 million. You know, I want acclaim. What does that mean? I want to be happy. What does it mean? You know, let's look at defining our purposes in things that you can tangibly manifest. If you want $10 million, let us try to talk about developing a creativity, okay? That is worth $10 million. Now that is something the universal law can give you. You know? If you want to be, I don't know, if your life's purpose is to travel, you can't just say, well, my life's purpose is to travel. Where?
My last purpose is to travel. But basically, I want to go to Africa. I'm interested in the history of the African people. I'm interested in the way they do things. I particularly want to go to Zambia. And I'd like to be there sometime before 1990. That's a purpose. A flip into the universal law of, like, I want to travel. You know, and out you come, and maybe your car's got three flat tires, and you get to walk out, you know? And it says she traveled. And the consciousness is dissipated. We're looking at trying to be specific, not so specific that you can't change as you go along, but getting our consciousness honed into an idea. Okay, I'm going to go around the room, and I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I do not want you to be in a group of, with somebody that you're close to. Like, if you're in a group with a husband or a wife, then swap groups, you know? Or if you're in a group with somebody that you're very close to, then change groups, okay? We're going to break up in 5. Just watch me so that you know which 5 that you're in, okay?
At this point in the seminar, the attendees broke up into little groups and began to vocalize and talk about their purpose in life. For those of you listening at home or on your own, this is what I would like you to do at this time, or at some time convenient to yourself where you have a moment to yourself. I would like you to take a piece of paper and a pencil, and I would like you to write in about half a page of writing the main events of your life so far. And then once you've written down your main events, what I then want you to look at is, I want you to look at what are you doing now. And so write down a line or two about what your life is at this time. What is the reality? Like, who are you? What are you doing? What are you earning? Where are you going? And then I want you to be very, very clear and practical about what it is that you want to achieve in this lifetime. Imagine if you had the opportunity to stand in front of a great saint or a great godly figure or a great sage or magician or somebody like that and have your wish granted. What do you want for your life? And what do you feel you can materialize? Because it's no point in saying, well, I want to be rich. Because the universal law doesn't respond to, I want to be rich. It responds to you bringing forward richness from within you. You know, so if you want to be wealthy, you would look at a line or a destiny pattern that will take you to that wealth. What is your purpose in life? What do you feel is the inner spiritual meaning to what it is you're doing? You know, and what do you want to manifest in this lifetime between now and when it comes to a close? When you look at it in that way, you'll begin to see how there are certain things in your life that are obvious. You know, there are certain creativities, there are certain moves that are obvious that you should make. And if you do it in a contemplative way, almost like a meditation, and you look at this purpose of life, it comes up from within you, and the inner guidance system that is so much a part of your destiny, which is so much a part of trying to get you to evolve to that divinity within you, to that limitlessness within you, it will prompt you. It will show you the way. It'll say, yeah, this is your strongest direction. So, at this point, if you have time, take a few moments to really look through, you know, where you've been so far, what you're doing now, and what you feel your greater purpose in life might be. Now back to the Melbourne tape.
Does my dress look all right?
Who cares?
Am I going to say the right thing? So what if you don't? Are they going to like me?
You don't care if they like you.
Am I going to do a good job?
Of course you are, because you're an expert at what you do. You've taken the trouble to make yourself an expert. Of course you're going to do a good job.
And so, you can never say to somebody, don't have a lack of self-confidence. It's impossible. You can't say to them, don't be not self-confident. All you can say to them is, let us look inside ourselves and step by step anchor the successes. There's a lot of things that you have done that were incredibly beautiful, that were triumphs. But did you take time to nurture your triumphs, to honor them, to think about them? To say, hot diggity dog, the way I cook minestrone is a miracle. You know, anything. I mean, people come from miles around to taste the stuff. It's so good. You know, you look at your triumphs and you see that as beauty. And as you begin to lock in beauty, 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 and you begin to treat all those other places where you lack, where there's a lack of beauty, as just learning. God, I made an unmitigating mess of that, but I learned. And then all of a sudden, life becomes just this orchestra, and sometimes it plays a little out of tune, but you love them anyway, you know? Question. Feelings, yes.
Yeah, I wanted to know whether that would also work with our self-sabotage that we've been going through. Yeah. Things get so far, and then it's almost like you can't have it that good.
Right.
And
well,
we sabotage.
Yes. Let me talk about that self-sabotage before we break the case. Rollo May wrote a book called The Courage to Create, okay? And in the book, he talks about the death urge. Because we're basically humans living a life sentenced to death, what happens is that death causes the ego so much fright it can't face it. Okay? So what it does is it resigns itself to it. It is almost as if I said to you, I'm going to send an assassin after you. Okay? Now this assassin is damn bright and relentless. Okay? And I'm going to tell you that the assassin will get you in the end. What the ego does is it has a moment of incredible fear, and then a couple of 3 minutes later, it resigns itself to the assassin. It resigns itself to death. It resigns itself to disaster. It's almost to the ego, and there's not a person in this room who hasn't had this feeling. There's a point in your life where you've said, disaster's fine. I'll take it. All right, I'll have it. No problem. Kill me. I'll take it. Do it now, but get it over with. You know? I don't want it going right, because if it goes right, that'll involve me in all sorts of responsibility, action, da-da-da, that might lead me into a whole bunch of stuff. Disaster is fine, because I can be a total failure, and then I can go back to my people and say, I tried hard, but I failed. And they will say, there, there, we love you anyway. You tried hard, you're a good bloatess, or whatever a feminine bloke is, and you tried hard and well done. And the ego will drop you into that. If you start going from $150 a week to $500, from $500 to $1,000, and suddenly you're getting $3,000 a week, and then you have this moment of anxiety, it can't last. The life force is infinite. It can last for as long as you last and more. There's no limit to how long it can last. There's no limit to how long your body can last. You can repair and rebuild every part of it. There's no limit to the extent that you can go. And so when you watch the ego pull you into the death urge, whether it's absolute actual death, you know, like, oh, I wish I was dead, I've had enough of this, or whether or not it's the kind of self-negating, self-abrogating ego death wish, whereby it says, I know you're doing quite well, but why don't we generate the incredible disaster? Then we won't have to bother to push against those things that we find hard, you know? We won't have to challenge ourselves. We won't have to stand up in front of a crowd of 1,000 people and show them how to do whatever it is we're doing. So we'll just organize it so nobody shows up. Or we'll organize, you know what I mean? You begin to organize yourself into collapse. So that you, A, the ego doesn't have to go through follow-through. Action, remember, the ego does not like action and follow-through. Those are not part of what the ego likes. Okay? What the ego likes is basically evasion, living in the future, not actually handling it. Okay? And then you can say, well, you see, I've tried hard. How many of you feel that you deserve success? Okay. Put your hands down. You're wrong.
You got it.
The universal law can never give you, there's no deserve or no deserve. I can say to your mind, you deserve success because I want you to believe in yourself. But in the universal law, you can't handle it like that. Because the universal law doesn't deal with deserve or no deserve. It doesn't say, oh, she's good, she deserves it. He's neat, he deserves it. This person is not so as to neat, so they don't deserve it. You can have anything you believe in. You can resonate that power, you believe in it. Okay.
What about karma?
There isn't any. Karma.
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect is you putting the energy out in the universal law and reflecting back your energy. That's karma. But karma, in the way that it's described in the Hindu books, say, for example, all right, sounds like it's inevitable. Like you got to walk down a road and break your bloody ankle because God willed it. Or because you bashed somebody up 9 generations ago in another previous life. It's not like that. If it was like that, you wouldn't come to the earth plane because there wouldn't be any point in you being here. Karma is basically speaking a pattern of weakness or strength that develops in you. Have you ever read a book of karma where they spend 300 pages talking about your strength? They always talk about what can happen to you bad if you don't get da-da-da, you know? And it's a way, sort of controlling the people, and it's a way of explaining the inevitability of all things, okay? And at 20,000 cycles a second, you're right, there's an inevitability of all things. At 100,000 cycles a second, you can step right beyond karma, you don't give a damn. You can walk past the person that you smashed up and killed and stomped and restricted and raped and bashed and crunched and smashed two lifetimes ago, and if your energies are 200,000 cycles a second and theirs is 20,000, they'll give you 20 grand for doing it. Karma, when people say, well, that's my karma, what they basically say, I will throw all responsibility in the air and I'll leave it to some kind of god that's going to plop this mayhem on my head from time to time. You see? It's just a way of belief. It's just, it's like saying Satan. Satan done it. They invented Satan when they didn't want to take responsibility. You know, why did these crops guys die? Satan did it. Why did Harry die? Satan did it.
It was God's will.
God's will, the will of Allah. Like as if God's sitting up there saying, well, I'll drive these guys crazy. I'll have none of the wheat growing this year. Okay, but that's polarity. It's not inevitability. You're talking about like yin-yang. Okay, that's polarity, but it doesn't mean that you have to be this or have to be that. You have inside of you the power to raise your energy to such a crescendo that there's no yin-yang karma or anything else that can ever, ever touch you. Because you're basically beyond the earth plane. But establish that divinity inside of you, karma's over. Now, if you do not maintain a balance and you don't watch the energy, your energy will fall. You'll be back in 20,000 cycles a second, and Arma Karma can hit you in the eye 90. Arma Karma. You see? So it doesn't negate your theories. What I'm saying is, there's a point within it where you're beyond it. So if you're sitting on the side of the road in India, in the Punjab or something, up to your neck in dust, with 2 rupees in your pocket, that's worth about 2 cents, then we can talk karma. You know? But you're not dealing with that. That's not your evolution this time. So for us, we're not dealing karma. We're just dealing with expressing energy and watching how neat it is coming back. From today onwards, the rest of your life is going to be this picturesque neatness. There's only going to be beautiful things. There's only going to be interesting events. There is no more possibility of anything ever going wrong. It's just you pushing out perfection. And perfection for 1 week, and you think, well, what happens in a week? So how can it last? It lasts because it's infinite. You can be infinitely well until one day you get to the point where this is the end of the physical plane, and you just lay down under a tree and go to sleep. You know, you can be infinitely successful, infinitely accepted, infinitely loved, infinitely a part of all things, and understand infinitely more and more about our plane. There is no limit. Any part of trouble? Karma trouble you still? You sure? Yes, sir.
Here's one. Oh,
often. Okay, that's good, because I want to take a quick break.
They were in deep in the day. I had probably the worst experience I've had in that kind of thing. I kept being religious about the light and love, and all I had was blackness and eyes and blue and everything, and I never wanted panic, and that's what God's for me. And then I realized that that's where I come from. That, you know, no wonder I hadn't had things. You know, I had things, I mean, I had abundance.
Right.
And they're negative. And I had just the pieces of light that I had, you know, the powerful coming down, which I could tap into. So it was only then that I had the realization that that's what I'd been.
Good. That's wonderful. That's really great. Thank you. Thank you. I like it. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Are we the same when selling, find out what the other person wants?
Yes.
Well, I've a problem where other people are telling me what they want and I don't want to do it. Because they always say, can you copy this? Can you do that? And I don't want to do that.
Why not?
What I want to do.
Oh. Yeah. But they're the customer.
Yeah.
I mean, if I come into your place and I say to you, I want a haircut, and you say, no, we're going to get a cheese roll, how does that serve me? I mean, I know you're a designer, so it's not appropriate, but basically speaking, if
If you do... Okay, there's a type of designing whereby you design what you want and you sell your ideas, or you design what people tell you to design. But then you can put your creativity into their design, can you not?
Well...
You can try to bend it without arguing with them.
Well, you see, I don't like doing it. You're saying not to do anything you don't want to do.
Then don't do that kind of work. If you really, really feel bad about doing the designs they want you to do, then don't do it.
What's your thoughts on the balance of giving and receiving? I believe that you should.
I think it's very imbalanced, and we're taught that giving is holy, and it isn't.
No, I'm talking about a balance of giving and receiving. How do you find
what it? I'm saying is, we are taught that giving is holy, and it ain't. It's nothing
so
to do.
They keep taking it.
What I'm saying is that most of us are so overly programmed to finding that giving is holy. Then what we really need to do is center for a year or 2 years or 3 years on receiving. Because you see, the person who said it is holier to give than to receive was the guy that was getting it. Because the universal law does not judge or quantify the giving or the receiving. But there is a metaphysical truth in the fact that if you're giving, you're expanding your hemisphere of confidence, of influence, because you're saying, I can depart, this wealth can depart from me, because I'm confident for my life force that more is going to come in. But all that business about, well, if you give here, you're going to get tenfold back and so on, that's just advertising. It's nothing to do with fact at all. You know, and what I see is, I see an incredible poverty inside people, an incredible lack of nourishment, lack of love, lack of self-acceptance, and lack of being able to receive. Try this. I said the other night, try giving a buck to somebody that you don't know who doesn't need it. It's terribly hard to do. And as you watch them, if you watch them reacting to you trying to give it, then let us see if you're open to receive if a person comes up to you in the street. So I know that metaphysically, in the sense of the love of God and the love of the living spirit, we would want to try to give of ourselves as much as possible. But you have to understand that everybody in this room has a disease called not being able to receive. You know, we have a disease inside of us which says we are not open, we do not honor ourselves enough to receive. So I say to you, never mind concentrating on giving for the moment, let us concentrate on receiving. Then in a year's time or 2 years' time when you've got it on the receiving, then you have the strength and you return to your people and you can give once more. You see what I'm saying? I mean, there's no hard and fast rules, but let us concentrate on nurturing ourselves. Yes?
If I've got $10 in it, I give it away, it's going to come back.
What I'm saying is, let's look at the emotion. Why are you giving this $10 away?
Because the more I get,
so if you're giving it to get it back, is that what you're saying?
No.
Because I'm saying to you, all right, try this. Try this. Try for 30 days not saying thank you. Ever. Somebody buys you dinner, just get up and say, see you next Thursday. If somebody opens the door for you, just walk in. Smile and walk in. You see, we're conditioned and programmed to act in those ways. We have these Pavlovian responses because our conditioning is like that. I'm saying we are so conditioned to considering receiving as not good, as evil, as something that really, you know, people aren't going to love us by giving us their money. So we concentrate a lot on giving. And we give of ourselves often in the sense of sacrifice. I'm saying to heal that, the way you heal it, is you begin to open to receive. Okay? Let us look at receiving. And if you concentrate on receiving, less and less the people will ask you to give of yourself. If you're in tune, you can walk down a street of beggars and not one of them will approach you. If you're out of tune, they'll come up and ask you for money. So what they're doing is they're identifying inside of you lack. And they're coming along and they see the lack in there, they feel it at the speed of light, and they come to you and they say, be a part of my lack. And they cannot be there unless you have the lack inside of you. Now, but I've had tramps walk up to me, like walking towards me. I know they're going to ask me, okay? And I've put myself in a bubble of white light and I've said, I'm eternal, immortal, universal, and infinite. Just as I walked up towards a tramp, and the tramp has literally gone, yeah, and crashed in the street to my feet. Just at the moment where he's going to say, buddy, can you spare a dime? the alcohol overwhelmed him and he hit the ground. So it looked like I was not in tune, but at the last minute I was in tune. No, I'm sure that I was just in the right place at the right time. I'm saying that if you don't concentrate on receiving, what do you get?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. So the concepts and the law saying that it's more blessed to give than to receive, in a way, it's right. Because why? Because when you give, you expand yourself. You feel secure. You say, I can give away $100 without feeling a sense of fear or crisis. So when you can give it away and not feel a sense of crisis, then that means you can have it again. But there is no law in the universe that says if you give $10, you're going to get $10 back. Or $20 or $100. And when the churches sell you that, that's just merchandising. Okay, it's just selling the product. It's merchandising, you know? It's just a way of them saying, here, this is the way that we're going to say. It's like the little children film, you know? It's got nothing to do with the church in Alabama, but up there comes the Ethiopian kids because it's an advert, you know? Like, for example, when you watch an advert for Coca-Cola, do they pan to a shot of 30 people having a lousy time, you know? This is a dungeon in Nicaragua, right? It's 140 degrees, and they pan to a shot of a guy that hasn't ate for years, has just been kicked in the mouth, drinking a cup of Coca-Cola out of a tin rusty mug. You know, they don't show you that image. They show you alive and well, it's the Pepsi generation, rah, 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 there's a bunch of kids on a beach on the back of a mini moog, you know, this is fun, you know? Okay, it's the same feeling. Okay, it's the same feeling. You're going to open to the beauty of receiving. You see beauty. The more you open to receiving, the less people will come up to you and say, give me your money. Then, when you've developed this power inside of you strongly, and you have hundreds of thousands of dollars you haven't got a clue what to do with, then you can wander back to the people and say, anybody need anything here? You see? We're not taught to concentrate upon ourselves, so we don't. We're not taught to love ourselves, so we don't. We're not taught to be courageous, so we aren't. We're not really taught to be strong, so we ain't. We're not taught to receive, so we have to eke it. We're not taught we're abundant, so we have to get it little by little, drip by drip. And we're taught all this other stuff, manipulation, restriction, stagnation, shortfall, negative expectancy, limited supply. Yes?
Stuart, I just went on the law of non-judgment. I can understand not interfering in other people's role. I just wonder if you could give me some feeling of how it works overall, because if I keep having non-judgment on everything, it doesn't mean I'm supposed to get stronger, but I find it hard to visualize.
The non-judgment, if you never judge, you're not involved in the emotion. So what you're doing is you're becoming godlike. Because God does not get involved in a judgment. Okay, the more you don't judge, the further you move away from defining. The less you define, the less hemispheres you build around yourself and the others. The God force is undefinable. There's a dimension that is not defined. That expansion feeling, the expansion feeling, is an undefinedness. The human condition is defined. My wardrobe, my clothes, my can of beans, my stereo, my car, my house, my family, my nation, my cricket club, my superannuation plan. The life force is wider than that and allows you to pull from more areas. By non-judgment, you opt out. Now, people say to me, and here's a confusion that can arise, what happens if you work in a company and you have to hire and fire people? That is not judgment. That is saying, I need a chef. I need the guy to be able to do this and this and this. He's got to be able to cook this and this and this. And so these are the conditions. If the person comes and they do not meet the conditions, then, you just allow them to go on. You ask them to stand down and to move beyond their way, you know? You're not judging them. You're not judging them. You're just saying you have a right to decide what you want in your life. And you can say, I want a chef that does these things at this time. Yes?
Non-judgment, does that mean you should not have likes and dislikes?
What I'm saying is, it's not that you don't have likes and dislikes. What I'm saying is, practice non-judgment for a while. It's a bit like practice receiving. Okay, then you can go back to having likes and dislikes. But practice having like a totally non-decision-making role for a while. Just for a while. You know, and even when you have dislikes and likes, realize that even there, you know, basically I would suggest that you have all likes. And no dislikes. One, because you're not going to do things you don't like. And two, if there is a dislike in there, then what is it teaching me? If it's teaching you something, you're going to like it. Yes?
What's the quickest way to kill the ego?
The quickest way, the undoing of the ego, is to step beyond fear. Beyond limitation, guilt, to literally feel that infinity inside of you all of the time. Write this down. If you identify with that infinity, you become it. If you accept only the positive part of yourself, the infinite part of yourself, you become it. So when somebody says, isn't this a lousy day? You say, I see beauty. Look how neat it is that the water's dribbling off the gutter like that. When somebody says it can't be done, you say, I heard a story of a man that did it with his eyes shut in 10 minutes. Even if it's a lie, because theirs is a lie as well. Because it's not true that it can't be done. It's only true for them. When people say limited supply, you say, I see abundance all over. I got a pay rise last week. I feel fantastic. I'm doing twice as well as I was last year. How about you? You see, once you identify with the infinity, you identify with the intuition away from the intellect, you identify with this unemotional love, non-judgment, non-criticism, you identify with the infinity inside of yourself, you identify with a feeling of wholeness, you have established a feeling of satisfaction, where the heck are we here? You realize that you're not perfect, you've got miles to go, we all have, but you're satisfied. You look at your triumph, so far so good, you know? You understand that basically, away from restriction, you have to grant the restriction of freedom to yourself first, then you grant it to the others. Once you feel strong enough in yourself, you can grant it to the others. And you become basically this powerhouse of the love of God. Put your hands together again, okay? See if you can feel it now. See if you can feel that feeling inside there. Feel it. Feel with your feelings. Okay, gradually open your hands up. Feel if you can feel a sort of a dragging of energy. Now push your hands back together again. Until they're just a couple of inches, 3 inches apart. Okay, put your hands down. Okay, do you feel it? Is it more than this morning or less?
More.
More. It's less? Okay.
More.
Yeah. It's less? You lost some? You tired?
No, I just didn't. This morning it was much harder as I was pushing in.
Okay.
But now
it was... Okay, all right. Okay, so your energy's gone down. Anybody else? More? Anybody still not feel it at all?
I hardly feel anything. I've been eating it today, but on Wednesday night I feel quite strong.
Okay. All right.